Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point, and the point today is one of Cleveland's most innovative, adventurous investors, and many other things, Justice Mendez. Justice, how are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I'm excited to chop it up with you. So Justice starts off 2024, and it is already somehow season four of the Chats with Clark podcast. So thanks for tuning in. If you haven't yet, hit the subscribe button, and let's get to it. Justice, give us a background story. Tell me a little bit about who you are and kind of where you came from.
Yeah, it's super interesting. Very unconventional kind of trajectory and pathway, but rich from the west side of Cleveland, born and raised, love it. I mean, everybody, if you ask anybody in Florida, anybody who knows me, they're always like, there's no shortage of my answers of where I'm from. Everybody knows where I'm from. So, born and raised on the west side, 52nd and Denison Stockyard neighborhood, grew up with a single mom. I was raised a majority by my grandparents. Okay. And throughout life, just, through all the hardships, I wanted to help other people. And I found that path of helping other people through entrepreneurship. So started a few companies. Now I have a venture capital fund. So far, I invested in about 11 companies. About to make our 12th investment, actually, in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
So yeah, just right now, hustling, working, trying to help the community, trying to help the city, and doing fun stuff like this.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And so for anyone who's listening that doesn't know, 52nd and Denison is not an easy living situation a lot of times.
Yeah.
Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that you grew up like looking at the world with a different lens, right? I think a lot of people see the best in people, and I try to do that every day. But sometimes when you grow up in that type of environment, you always see the worst in people, right? You see the where their true intentions are and what they're really trying to accomplish. Those are ulterior motives, right? And like I tell people all the time, I mean, where I'm from, people are trying to sell you a dream every day, right? So people are trying to tell you things, they're trying to lead you in the wrong direction. And a lot of these lessons that I learned as a young man actually helped me so much in the business world, negotiating with people, understanding just the way that your cuticles are bit down. I could tell you're a nervous person, the small things, body language, everything. So I think that it gave me a really big advantage. I also think that I'm still, trying to overcome and deal with some of the things that kind of still lingers with me. One of the biggest things I learned was actually I didn't realize this about myself. I had a scarcity mentality. So I always thought that there wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And my friends were like, dude, there's enough. Stuff like food and okay, I got to be cheap here. And it's like, dude, live in absolute abundance. There's as much as you want of anything. So yeah, I'm just trying to, become the best person I can and I'm trying to help out.
That's awesome. For a guy who is investing in other people, it's clear to see that belief in others has evolved, right? Because if the essence is to invest in companies that you think are going to do well, you're not investing in what you described before as what would have been like the ugly side of people.
Right.
You're investing in what you know can be prosperous.
Absolutely.
It's very interesting that dichotomy and how that's shifted over the years.
Yeah, I think people generally are great people, and everybody just kind of, become selfish at some point. So,
fair enough. You mentioned that your grandparents raised you primarily. That's beautiful. What has that relationship taught you with both of them?
Yeah, I mean, definitely patience. So when you're young and growing up with like younger parents, they look at life kind of faster, right? But an older person that's kind of at the end of their life, they're a lot more patient and they have a completely different viewpoint on where they're at. So I think that really kind of taught me a lot of wisdom growing up with people who are a lot older than me.
Sure.
Kind of gave me different life lessons. I mean, at that point, my mom was like young, single mom. So she probably couldn't tell me all the best things on what to do in life.
Yeah.
But also a really great thing that my grandparents instilled in me was hard work. Like when I was a little kid, me and my grandfather would walk around 52nd and look for pennies on the street.
Wow.
And he was just like, this is what I used to do back in Puerto Rico. So it was like a crazy story. He came here with 10 cents, slept in hay barrel to hay barrel, farm to farm. Like those guys where they pull up in Home Depot and they're like, hey, you, get in the back of the truck. That was my grandpa. And he would just literally go from farm to farm, picking cherries. My grandmother was pregnant, picked as many cherries as she could eat just so that they had food.
Wow.
Like crazy stories. So, it made me always be like super grateful for what I have, even if I don't have much. And also I was always like, I have one bed and I have food. So I was always super grateful, super thankful. But I'll never forget that type of like hunger that they taught.
Seriously, yeah. And that's scarcity right there, right?
Yeah.
There was always enough,
right.
But just enough, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Like just enough for her to be nourished, just enough for
100%.
Just enough work for him to have.
Yeah. It's funny because he was always like really small. And he told me, he was like, that's because I never got to eat growing up. So I guess like 3 out of 5 kids in his neighborhood in Puerto Rico died of starvation
That's
during the Great
terrible.
Depression. Yeah, of starvation. That's sad. He was telling me that he used to have to wake up before the pigs would wake up at 6. He would go there like 4:30 in the morning and eat from the pig trough to be able to
Jeez, oh man.
eat the feed. Yeah, just to survive. So it's like, you know, I'm over here talking about like I had it hard. I'm like, this dude had it
That
10 times
influence,
harder than
yeah.
that. He worked 43 years without one day off on the railroad.
Oh my
You know,
God.
came here to Cleveland and ended up working at the railroad 43 years, no days off, no injuries. I won like a little small little gold watch and then, you know, you retire. So I didn't want that. I wanted to get into tech and I told them this. And, you know, they're like, that's not for people like us. And my mom, she works at General Motors. So like my family's super blue collar. I'm the only one that went off into tech or investing. First time I heard about a credit card was from a 40-year-old crack dealer the day I turned 18. Yeah. And he's like, you need to start building credit. You need to. And I was like, what's a credit card? So imagine financial literacy. I was 100 steps behind. So for me to be at the table I'm at now, I had to put in a tremendous amount of work and had to really learn as much as possible.
How did you bridge that gap from 52nd and Denison, 18-year-old Justice, to now about to invest into your 12th company?
Yeah, I mean, I truly believe it's God. You know, like I prayed one night and I asked, I was just like, hey, if you help me get out of this situation, I will dedicate the rest of my life to helping others. And I swear on everything, just stuff started to change. And I started to follow the signs. I'm like really big on that. I don't think that everything's just like, oh, this is a weird coincidence.
Coincidences, please.
Yeah,
Yeah, no.
right. It's like sometimes things happen and you really have to be like, you know what? This might be for a reason and let me walk into it. There's a really great book called The Surrender Experiment, and that's Michael Singer, who we've been seeing. So he's like a mentor to Oprah, mentor to Tony Robbins, and he allows people to come to his house in Gainesville, Florida, which is crazy. And he sold a company for $5 billion, ended up becoming like some spiritual guru, and he always says this, like, you have to be able to surrender sometimes to the outcomes. That's in the Bible too. Surrender the outcomes to God, right? Because we don't know what's in store for us,
Amen.
and we don't know the best. So it's just like sometimes you just have to walk with faith and just kind of go
That's
out in the
it.
blind, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
And for people who have struggled, that tends to be something that you can resonate with, right? Like when you've seen pain, when you've lived it, then you can understand that, you know what, there are brighter days ahead and that I'm not going to get this until I can connect the dots looking backwards.
Absolutely. I remember somebody said something that I never forgot. My name was a pastor. He was just like, it's like walking through a cave with a flashlight, right? You don't know what's at the end of the cave, but you could see 5 feet in front of you. And what you have to do is just keep seeing that next 5 feet and then next 5 feet and just keep walking with faith. And you don't know what's at the end of the tunnel, but just keep walking.
And so you start practicing for yourself, you're studying. How are you doing all this? How are you learning the ins and outs of the business?
Yeah. So I talk about this all the time. Like, there should be no reason why somebody's like, I don't know XYZ, right? It's all on the internet. Everything is at your fingertips.
For sure.
So immediately, I mean, 15, 14, right? I'm already like, I'm starting to sell shoes on eBay. I'm trying to learn how to start a digital marketing company. I'm okay, well, everybody's getting rich off investing. Maybe I should be an investor, right? I mean, it's like reverse engineering it. It's like, okay, who are the richest people in the world? Okay, these four people. Okay, how'd they make their money? Okay, by doing XYZ. So it's just like, one of my favorite quotes is Sir Isaac Newton. It says, if I see further than my peers, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. Yeah, which means just like don't recreate the wheel. Like everything's already out there. So yeah, I just started to be around people who had what I wanted. Just started to really try and, you know, sharpen up my skills. Just try and learn from reading books, listening to podcasts, and just experience. I mean, you can't replace that.
And did you find that, because when you tell me that your 40-year-old crack dealer was the first person to introduce a credit card to you, there's a major disconnect between a 40-year-old crack dealer and then sitting at the table you are, the giants that you speak about. So what were some of the steps that you took along the way? So you're studying, but how did you actually get yourself at that table? Because there's a disconnect there, right? And like
There is.
you had an uphill battle for sure.
Yeah, I
So
would
you're
say
praying, you're
just,
working.
yeah, and I could go through some of the granular details if you would like also, but as a more of like a general context, I would say the biggest thing for anybody who's listening or who wants to sit at these tables, right, is that you have to be a giver, right? So that's one, and I can get into more of the actual like step-by-step for me personally on how I ended up being at these tables. But it started off with me literally, you know, sorry for my language, but eating shit, like literally making nothing and just giving everything I have. Yeah. And just trying to bring value to the table. Because at the end of the day, they're like, who's this young kid, right?
Right.
He doesn't have anything. He doesn't know anything, right? He doesn't have any connections. Why should he be here? So it's just like, hey, if I earn my keep, right?
Yeah.
Then you'll want me around, right? And I used to say this to people. I'd be like, hey, I'm in a competition with you. And they're like, for what? And I'm like, I want to bring more to you than you could bring to me.
That's
and
awesome.
Whoever says that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right.
I always want to do more for you than you could ever do for me.
Sure.
And it's just like, why would you do that? It's because you always want to keep me around.
Yeah.
Every time you see me win, would you not want to see me more often?
Right.
Right?
So yeah.
It's just like that type
interesting
of mentality.
Sales strategy. Yeah.
Right. That type of mentality is kind of like what I live by.
And I feel like anyone that knows you knows that you do bring a lot of energy. Every time I see Justice, he's a guy that smiles. As you can tell, he's a guy with energy and someone that brings that charisma.
Yeah.
That's important. It sounds like you might have some of that from your grandpa in you. I don't know, just touching. Yeah. But
he was definitely a funny guy for sure.
Hats off to him again. But so you're doing all this work now on yourself in your community. What was the end game? So you wanted to help people. How?
It's a great question. I'm still trying to figure that out.
Okay.
I think that there's a lot of different areas where people need help. I mean, housing, literacy, like. 72% of the Stockyard neighborhood between the ages of 18 to 45, these people are illiterate below fourth grade level. That means they have like problems reading prescriptions and stop signs and small stuff like that. So it's just like simple things like this that we kind of take for granted, like our ability to read and write.
Right.
Like some of these people don't have that. Access to food, access to water, just like Maslow's hierarchy needs. Like if you have just the basic needs met at least, then like you could start to do the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But some people don't even have those basic needs. So first, I kind of want to be able to kind of like shift the mindset. And I think that that's what can really create the flywheel for people to be able to help themselves. Because like you can't just give people resources forever. Like you have to teach them how to fish. That's where they're going to be able to be good. So one of the initiatives that we're doing is called Futureland. And Mayor Bibb actually is helping fund some of this. And it's a big initiative that he's pushing. But it's like trying to bring BIPOC, like black indigenous people of color, I think is BIPOC, more underserved communities, bringing them into tech. So that's why I'm also big on tech. Like I think that this is going to be the biggest exchange of currency like in history.
Sure.
Like think about this. All this whole entire city, right, was built by people who were steel magnates and oil guys and, you know, they have a monopoly for the next few hundred years.
Yeah.
And it's old money and families and multi-generational, right? But nowadays, that's all dying. Now it's, hey, there's some kid in a dorm room who now is worth $3 billion.
Yeah.
Right? And new money, and it's happening overnight, and it's happening faster than ever. So now there's an exchange of this cash that's happening. And that's why I think tech can not only provide resources for people, you know, by providing more food and more efficient, you know, services, but also people can make money off of it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's inevitable to see that tech is the grain work that's tying everything together.
Absolutely.
At this point. Like,
yeah,
the opportunities are endless. And what's crazy about tech is it's the same thing as like every time you think you've seen it all, then the next thing comes out.
Right? Yeah.
And you're like, oh man, how could there ever be more? And then AI comes out and it's just going to keep going. Right. And like, it's not one of those fields, like you talk about the city. I mean, the building's a building.
Right.
And Justice and I were talking about as we were walking in here, everything's made of marble in Cleveland.
Isn't that crazy? Really,
yeah, it's beautiful. But even that, right? Like that's antiquated now.
Right.
And that's not something that's going to change.
Yeah.
So the tech industry seemingly just keeps going, which means all the more opportunities along the way.
Yeah, no, it's going to be crazy. I was talking with this one guy and he was explaining it, you know, it was so well put. He was just like, if you're not either using AI in your daily life or investing in AI, you're literally missing out on the next internet. Like think about the people who were building businesses during the dot-com era, right? When the internet was first being, you know, made available to people and they just kind of sat by and let it coast past them. This is that same opportunity and it could be potentially bigger than that.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you have to be like learning the game and try to do this.
And while we're talking about it, when you bring it up, why don't you touch on a little bit about your company, that who you work for, what you do for them, and then what you look for people that you invest in?
Yeah. So I'll kind of start off with a story. So 2016, I met my business partner, Pablo Castellanos. I met him at the Entrepreneurship Club at University of Florida. It was a random Tuesday night, pitch night. He was pitching like some mastermind app, like helping people connect and, you know, build these little mastermind groups. I was already hosting mastermind groups with my friends who were like engineers, business people, just talk about the future of tech. Maybe one day we could build something together, but we all kind of had our own interests. And I was like, you know what? We should hang out. You know, like you're here on a Tuesday night, so you're dedicated. You're trying to build mastermind groups. I am too. So it's like, hey, let's just hang out. We immediately became like best friends. So and it's even crazier because now that I tell this story, there's like even more background that's just about to happen now with an AI company. But so I had to call a parking company at that time. It was called Q Parking. You know how like there's Park Mobile on the street and stuff like that? I was trying to get into the parking game. I had an app, trying to raise capital. And in Florida, 2016, there was zero venture capital. Right, like early stage, especially, there's like none.
It's massive.
That's now.
Huge shift.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So yeah, I like to say like we're early adopters. Like, and obviously COVID helped a lot because you know people were more open to investing outside of Silicon Valley. Like back in the day, if you weren't in Silicon Valley, like you're not going to get big checks. So you know we saw this. I was just like, hey, I'm trying to raise some money. It was hard. So me and Pablo were just like, you know what, we should start to host. And a lot of our friends were leaving and go into Silicon Valley or New York to go raise money and build a company. And one of them was actually Jack Kendall, who I talk about all the time, who we're going to have a great announcement here soon. And so we were like, hey, let's just start communities around founders and funders. So we got together with a bunch of founders, we got a bunch of investors, we had professors, and we started once a month hosting events. And I'm really big on community. Like, I think that that's the hack to everything. Like podcasts, hack to meeting people. Planning events, hack to meeting people and building your network. Like there's so much that you could do through building community. It's just like, to me, it's the core around everything else.
Isn't that what it's all about too? Like people want to be validated. People want to be heard and to experience one another. I think we all long for community to some capacity. Absolutely. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful and powerful.
Yeah. And when you do that, you're an amazing person. Like seriously. But, so we just started hosting the events and then they got to be some of the most popular tech events in like Northern Florida and Central Florida. And we're like, you know what? Like we should start to build on workshops and we want to build a Y Combinator someday. And I was like, hey, let's map out our goals. And we were like, let's start an accelerator. Let's start a fund. Let's do this. But we thought this was going to be way out. Like we're like, as we get older, you know, maybe when we're 40, we'll launch a fund. I kind of knew it was going to happen sooner.
Yeah.
But
you're an ambitious guy.
You know what I used to say? I used to say, let's take your 10-year goals and make it 10 months.
Right? That's awesome.
Like, yeah. I want to hear 10 weeks and 10 days and 10 years and 10 months. So all of a sudden the pandemic happened. So we're going into in-person events and in-person workshops. Then all of a sudden the pandemic happens. Everybody just kind of took their hands off the wheel and was like, I don't know what to do next. I was like, good thing we mapped out what we wanted to do. Let's just go into our long-term goals, right? Let's just step into our vision. So we started an accelerator, completely virtual, off Zoom. And it was perfect timing. Timing is so important because everybody else's programs had to shut down because they're all in person.
That was it.
And they're like, what do we do now? Well, luckily we were like, hey, let's just come to us, right? Let's just launch off Zoom. All we had was literally Zoom calls. And we created a 10-week program. Each week is something different, building product, raising capital, learning legal terminology, you know, just getting them. It's an accelerator, so it's helping them accelerate their business. We brought in the chief ethics officer of Airbnb, the former VP of growth at Spotify, like some really great people, former CEO of Priceline. And it's easy because they're on Zoom. They're like, yeah, I'm not going to fly into wherever you're at.
Sure.
I can get them to hop on virtually.
Yeah.
So we did that. We had 10 companies per cohort. We had four cohorts. So we had 40 companies that went through the program. We helped them raise over $13 million. They generated over $15 million in about a year and a half. And then one of them got acquired. So, but we were doing it all for free because we were like, hey, we just want to help people when people need help right now.
Sure.
And we were just like, we called our mentor, Martin Chappell. He's a man. I'll tell you about him too. We call him and we're like, hey, Marty, we helped 40 companies raise $13 million and generate this. And one of them got acquired. And he goes, how much did you make off it? And we're like, well, you told us not to focus on the cash. He was like, you took my advice way too serious. He was like, dude, there's $13 billion. He was like, you need to start to put yourself into some of these deals.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So then me and Pablo came back, right? I'm like,
that's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So we came back to all the investors and we're like, hey, like, can we get a cut from the deals? And the majority of them said no. Yeah. So we're like, you know what? We're the ones doing all the hard work. We're the ones putting the deals together. We're the ones spending 10 weeks with them to get them ready. So we're like, let's just launch our own fund. So we literally pitched everybody. We went out to all the investors that come to our demo days, came to all of our mentors, and you know, some people were just like, here's some money. One of our bigger investors, he invested in three deals that came through our accelerator. And he was like, here's $250,000, get started. Flew it on his jet for lunch. And he lives like 2 hours away.
How driving. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. How cool.
I was like, this dude's a baller, bro. It's funny. The biggest checks are the easiest ones. He literally came in and was just like, hey, all right, so this is what I want. And I was like, okay. And he was like, all right, let's just have lunch. It's just that.
Yeah.
You know? And then you have some people that are like asking you a million questions and they write the smallest check.
That's funny.
So yeah. Yeah. So now we have a VC fund. We invest pre-seed and seed in enterprise software and government technology. So yeah, we did about 11 deals so far. I'm about to do our 12th.
Congrats. That's incredible. And the company's 161.
161 Ventures, yeah.
That's beautiful. So that's Pablo and you.
Yep.
And then do you have any other partners at this point?
We have a venture partner out in Seattle that helps out with some stuff. And but me and Pablo, yeah, started it all.
Where are you in your pecking line of long-term goals?
That's a great question. You know what? I try not to be too structured. I try to be super flexible because, like I was saying, you know, we're walking in a dark cave. Like, I can only see the next 5 feet. So I try to be, like, pretty flexible. I want to start to buy real estate.
Okay.
You know, so I haven't done that yet. That's this upcoming year, that's a big plan.
It's a big goal, yeah.
Yeah, I want to put together some real estate deals. I want to do more community work. Like a lot more. Like, I want to speak at schools. I graduated from John Marshall. So I want to, they just changed to like John Marshall School of Engineering or something. So
sweet.
I'm trying to bring some of the tech stuff that I'm doing into the schools.
Yeah.
Really try to help out the city. Cause like, dude, there's so much talent here, but we just were never really given the resources. So I'm trying to bring that to the table, trying to help out. More stuff like this, like media stuff, helping friends, hanging out with friends, traveling.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I think those are some of the goals for 2024.
That's awesome. That's great. And does Pablo agree? How does that work?
With what?
The goals.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we live, this is the good thing about me and him. We're so close and we're like absolute brothers where we give each other enough space. Like whatever he wants to do, he could go do. Whatever I want to do, I can go do.
Sure.
And then as long as the work gets done, everything's good.
It's all good. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah, as long as the work gets done, everything else is good. So yeah, and you know what's funny is that everybody said that a 50-50 partnership between two people will never work. Our some of our biggest mentors, they ran a huge company that did $600 million in annual revenue. It's called Infinite Energy. The guy's name is Darren Cook and Rich Blazer. And they were telling us the only way we'll work is the no has the veto. So if I say no and you say yes, right, the no has two votes. So just always, because if not, people get into these arguments and then it's a stalemate.
Sure.
And then that's why people have like a third person who's like a board member or the person who, but it's just like, we know what's best. And as long as we have a high level of mutual respect and the no gets two votes, it's like, oh, I said no. Okay, cool. You know what? And either I could try and convince you, but if not, it's no.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then it's like back to the drawing board. How can we revise this so that I can convince you that it's a yes?
Right.
Right. Like, and then you're rallying ideas off each other as well. Right. And it's because when you have ambitious guys like that too in a one-on-one partnership, it's going to be, how can we make this better for both of us as opposed to just letting it die, whatever the idea is.
Yeah. I found a blessing with, you know, partnering with Pablo because not only like a brother, but also like level-headed. We both have this type of thing where it's just like, if somebody's like, hey, I'm adamant about this, it's like, okay, cool. Might be right, might be wrong. Let's try it. Let's figure it out.
Yeah.
We have that type of respect for each other. So it's like, it's dope.
That's awesome. And then you know when you can pull back to it. You guys can be truthful with each other. It's like, hey, dude, this isn't working.
Yeah.
Hey, man, this is great. Let's keep going.
Right, for sure.
You need that. Beating around the bush isn't going to cut it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm like, well, that sucked. Let's scratch that.
Back to the drawing board.
For sure.
That's great. Justice, another question I have for you. What keeps you in Florida? Because you mentioned how when you were there in 16, right, it was kind of just getting going as far as tech and the part of venture goes. And so now 8 years later, almost, you're still there and it is booming. I mean, I know as someone even outside the industry that it is the venture capitalists reign in Florida.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
People are fleeing everywhere else to go there. Flocking to Florida.
100%. Yeah. It's crazy. I think the population like 2 weeks ago just surpassed the state of New York.
My God.
So dude, it's blowing up. There's like $4 trillion that moved to Miami. So a few things. So I got there in 2014, so it's almost been 10 years now.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's a few things. I think the first thing that's very obvious is just like the lifestyle.
Okay.
You can't beat it. Like, you could walk out of your door, be on a beach. You could wear shorts all year round. Like, I remember I was spending 2 weeks in New York and then 2 weeks in Miami. And I was like, let me just, like, compare lifestyles and see which one I liked better. And I was in New York. There's trash. There's sewers. I got to go to the bodega and get a chopped cheese. And then I go to Miami. I literally get off the airport, go to my friend's apartment. We hop on jet skis. I'm on a private island, literally sipping Coronas in, like, 30 minutes. And I was like, all right, this already won.
Yeah, like, day and night.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Hop in the Hudson. It's black and brown water. So, yeah, I think the lifestyle is just, like, a no-brainer. No income taxes, which is also, you know, super favorable.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the concept of, like, a Rockefeller to Cleveland, right? Like, he helped build this place, helped build the country. Our founding fathers helped build the country. Like, I believe we were early pioneers in Florida. And I think that there's, like, something that we can build there is, like, hey, we were some of the earliest people that built the infrastructure for everything going.
Yeah, that sense of connecting.
Yeah, so, like, I want to be remembered. I want to have that relevancy, and you know, people be like, hey, one day, wow, this guy helped build a lot of this stuff. And some of the people who I look up to the most are very similar people that, you know, they sacrifice so much to help other people have the opportunities at the table. And that's the same thing I want to do in Cleveland. That's why I was trying to come back. That's what I'm trying to do with Futureland. That's what I'm trying to do with some of the stuff that I want to do at schools. Me and one of my best childhood friends, his name is Rondo Foster. He just got out of prison after 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And me and him started a program called Trat Free, Transformation, Responsibility, Accountability, Purpose, and Power. And, you know, we're helping young gang members, young inmates, you know, people who are in prison for murder, you know, all sorts of things. And now we're trying to bring that to K-12 and a bunch of other different areas, like people who are underprivileged and this messed up mentality. So
sure,
try to do more work like that.
How do you build that connection? How do you come in and say, like, I'm an investor, and then bridge it with someone who is in a gang or someone who is fresh out of prison, like in prison,
yeah,
or whatever? That, I mean, that's a tough,
it's a hell of a question.
Yeah.
So I think that he and this is what I learned when I went back to John Marshall to speak for the first time, is people will only listen if they know that you had similar experiences.
Sure.
So, like, looking and just being like, oh, this is some investor.
Yeah, I'm not coming to this. You think I'm listening to this guy? Yeah. Right, absolutely.
But then if I lead, like, hey, this is where I'm from, this is what I've been through, you know, I got kidnapped at 14, literally.
Oh, my God.
You know, so it's just like, if I lead with all the same, they're like, wow, this dude's so similar to me.
Yeah.
This happened when I went back to John Marshall to go speak. I used to go visit my teachers. Like, I just visited one of them 2 weeks ago. And we would just go back to her room during lunch and just catch up and stuff. And one day we're walking back to the room and she goes, I'm sorry, but I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm like, what? And I'm, like, dressed all nice and stuff and, like, a button down. And then she's like, here, kids, this kid, Justice, used to be in the same class and blah, blah. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, you put me on the spot. I didn't know I was going to publicly speak. I had nothing prepared. So I started off, like, super, like, positive. Like, I was like, hey, guys, I'm Justice, you know. First kid stands up. He goes, man, fuck you. Gets up, walks out.
Fair enough. Yeah, right. I mean, that's a reality check right there. It is.
And I was like, whoa, tough crowd. All right. The next kid, immediately after that, just goes, man, fuck you. I'm from the hood. So all of a sudden, something in me just snapped.
Yeah.
Like, I was, like, actually pissed. Like, something in me just snapped. I was just like, yo, what hood? And he was like, what? And I was like, what hood are you from? He's like, I'm from 147th Lorraine. I was like, that's not a fucking hood.
Yeah.
That's not shit. All of a sudden, he was like, what? And I just went into my story, background. This is what happened. This is what I went through. This is all life experiences. You know, I'm from probably somewhere way worse than you, right? 147 Lorraine compared to 52nd and Dennison.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't even compare. So I'm just, like, explaining everything. The first kid who stood up and goes, fuck you, the principal's bringing him back in. He goes, oh my gosh, you know my older brother Javon. He's like, you're Justice, I heard about you. It's crazy.
That's so
everybody
crazy.
Everybody in the room got quiet.
Absolutely. Everyone's
like,
all ears.
Even my teacher was like, what? Like, everybody was like, you know, who the fuck is this guy? Then the same kid was like, fuck you. He was just like, wow, you know my older brother. I know who you are.
Yeah.
He was like, bro, you're a legend. I was just like, damn, that's crazy.
That is
great.
That's, I mean, that's got to be great crazy. For you, too, to hear that, right?
Yeah.
Like, and there's something like, what that is the definition of doing it by example, too. You actually being there and showing up for that community, for those kids, for your teacher. Like, how cool is that? So someone that was in those desks, right. Full circle, you're back there now supporting them and saying, like, hey, like, you could be here too.
100%, bro. That's one of the biggest, for sure. I think that's one of the biggest things that, like, I didn't have growing up that I wanted to fix is, like, somebody just showing you, like, hey, you can do it too, you know? And that's why I try not to be, like, super, like, I think some people get, either they love me or they hate me. And some people get turned off by me because maybe I'm not as, you know, prim and proper, and you know, sometimes I cuss, and sometimes I'm vulgar, and sometimes I spit on the sidewalk, and sometimes I still wear sneakers, you know. But this is, I never want to lose myself within that, because at the end of the day, these kids don't want to look up to somebody who's in some button-up suit and tie every day. Mm-hmm. They want somebody who looks like them, sounds like them, talks like them, walks like them. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, bro, I'm still the same kid that I was growing up.
Right.
Now I'm just at a different table, more opportunities, and I built these, you know. Yeah. But I want to be able to show them, like, you could do it too. And you don't have to sell out, and you can still be who you are. And it's just like, but you also have to elevate yourself. Yeah. And you got to work, you know, but it could happen. So,
wow. That's an amazing story, Justin. I'm blown away by that. Seriously. Like, it's just, and I think I as a person who's in education myself, I adamantly believe that human beings from their youngest years, from the most primitive rudimentary ages, like the 5-year-olds all the way through to adults that have, you know, kids of their own, to grandparents and older people who are maybe nearing the ends of their lives, everyone in between, that we all have kind of the same set of needs and wants. And it just elevates. I think we all have the same issues, and we just phrase it differently. Like, literally, we all want what we can't have, or what we need. And, like, we're going to have a reaction if we don't get those things. And then it just grows up. So from you're a kid, it's like, you need to share. And you don't want to share, right? I don't want to share. You throw a fit. I mean, that's what kids do. And then it goes up. Well, now, look at it now, right? If you get told that what you're doing isn't going to cut it, people, what do? They throw a fit, right? It's an HR report. It's you're complaining about the next guy. You're going on Twitter. You're blasting someone, right? It just changes. The methodology changes, but our wants and needs are the same from when we're a kid all the way till we're an adult.
Absolutely.
And everyone in between. And so a story like that really resonates with me, because you're living the example of, like, hey, I hear your needs. I have the same ones.
Right.
And look at how we can transform them into this different lifestyle.
Yeah. We're the same people.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And that's something that I've been being more aware of. And my boy told me this when he was in prison too. He was just like, yo, like, speak your story. He was like, be vulnerable. He was like, your pain is your power, and that's your platform. And I was like, what? You know, because at first when I went out there, like, I was like kind of like embarrassed and ashamed. Like, I remember one day we went, like I was saying, not having the manners and etiquette and not understanding. They took me out to a dinner, right? And it was just like some bullshit dinner. It was like, you know, it was a nice place, but, you know, it wasn't like, you know, some 5-star, you know, 3-Michelin-star restaurant. It was like, it was a nice place though. But the one guy was like, yo, I'm done with my food. And I saw like a bunch of French fries and like some chicken tenders. And the waiter like picked up his plate and was like taking it away. And I stood up and brought my plate and scooped it off with my hand. And everybody was like, oh my God, I've been seeing anybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, dude, there's more food. If you want more food.
Yeah.
But like, for me, I was just like, what? Like, I didn't understand that was something you're not supposed to do. I was just like, don't waste food.
Right.
But they're like, you can't just stand and just start scraping off leftovers from everybody's plates at the table.
Yeah.
So at first, like, I was like, man, like, I'm embarrassed, you know? But then I started to tell people, like, hey, this is my story. This is my background. People just resonated with it. Mm-hmm. Just like how we were talking about. People are like, wow, this is crazy. You know, like, this is amazing. Yeah, now I kind of understand why, you know, you do the little weird things you do.
And that's what makes us who we are, right? Like, I think kind of like what you're saying, to trust your own story. When you find out who you are and you become comfortable with some of the ins and outs of your personality and like your traits and the flaws that we all have, then you can really lean into those. And that is your truth. That is your story. That is your strength almost.
Absolutely. Like, when you tell people things, like, they feel like, wow, like, now I can understand myself within them. And it's just like, dude, it's such a big superpower. So now I try and lead with, like, this is who I am, this is where I'm from, like, everything else like this. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny when we go out, my friends are like, where are you from again? Because I'm always like, I'm from Cleveland. I let everybody know.
This is a place that is so connected and it's full of opportunities. And I think Cleveland gets that rep of, you know, it gets knocked. But it's a place that is full of opportunities. It's people who work hard. Yeah, it is. It is always the underdog. I mean, our Browns right now. They're balling. Yeah. So, Justice, out of your life, one of the questions I always ask people are, who are some of your influences? Whether it's people that you know, people you work with, or whether it's people, right, like one that I often hear is Kobe Bryant or someone to that effect that you probably don't know or wouldn't have known, but still leave an influence on you.
Great question. So I'd say my biggest influence probably growing up was my grandfather, right? A lot of great lessons, work hard, you know, stay dedicated, good family man, loving, you know, amazing person.
Yeah.
I would say probably my next biggest, pretty much my biggest mentor and influence, I would say, and my mom's big influence on me as well. Something that I always tell my friends that my mom taught me that I never forgot. She said, you know what everybody's problem is? They don't think big enough. I was like, damn, that's right.
That is. That's true. Yeah, that's good.
So that's big. Martin Schaffel. He's me and Pablo, like all the 161 stuff we're doing and all those events and community stuff like that, a lot of that was all, he was the catalyst for that. So he was the first person that kind of like took us to these big events of people who are all, you know, nine figures plus, and, you know, there's all in super curated tight circles. And we're like, holy shit, this is insane.
You know,
so he sold a company, AVI SPL, for like $500 million. He owned 100% of the company.
Wow.
Like there's people who are, you know, billionaires who don't have $300-500 million liquid cash in their account.
Right.
You know, that's a lot of, to have liquid, like it can be worth a billion, but it's all real estate stuff.
Right.
Having that liquid cash is like, holy shit.
And
he wrote a book called Leadership Nirvana. So he teaches us a lot about leadership and professionalism. And I won't get too much into that, but yeah.
How do you meet Martin? Yeah.
So he's a professor at the University of Florida.
Okay.
Yeah. And Pablo was actually in his class. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to sit on every class that I could ever sit in for that Marty's teaching.
That's so good.
So he's a man. Like, this guy's insane. Like, he taught us about how he went and increased his market cap of his company in like of $150 million in like 3 months.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine making $150 million in 3 months? He basically hostile took over every other company in the industry around him.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's a crazy guy.
Yeah.
He's insane. And then I would say one was family, one was like a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
The third one, somebody I don't know, LeBron James. Right? Like, that was always a major inspiration for me. And not even just like basketball aside, like, I don't care about that. Obviously, like, I got to grow up watching the greatest athlete of all time. Right? So I was trying to give the analogy to people in Florida. I'm like, imagine being in the 90s growing up and being like, I watched Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, I grew up watching LeBron, you know, and seeing those games in person. Now that I'm older, I'm like, holy shit, bro.
Right?
That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, we were just like so lucky.
I mean, little kids, right? You watch him just elevate. Yeah. He would just put down this crazy, thunderous dunk. Yeah.
Crazy. But aside from that, just like, he came from nothing, stuck true to his roots, hired all of his friends, made all of them rich, all of them millionaires, then built schools in his neighborhood, gives back to everybody. So for me, that was like, and he even says it, I'm more than an athlete. And like, I always had that mentality, like, wow, like, dude, I want to be like this guy. This guy, like, it makes me emotional when I see what he does, because I'm like, this is like who I want to be like. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to build schools. That's my biggest life goal, is to build schools.
That's awesome.
And building housing for people, like being able to give people opportunity. Like, he's changing generations forever.
Yeah.
And everyone's sure. Like, this guy's the real deal.
Yeah. And it is. It is more than, like you're saying, more than just the court. I mean, that's school and all that ripple effect of people that he will have having gone through there and their family. And like, it just keeps going. It is. It just keeps going from there. And that'll really obviously solve the literary pandemic of sorts that we talked about earlier. Epidemic. We're like, you know, it's.
It is.
Yeah.
It's an epidemic, bro. Half these kids can't read and write.
Yeah.
I'm like, how are you going to get ahead? You can't even read or write. It's insane.
It's nuts.
I tell my friends all the time, I'm like, dude, you're blessed. Like, where I'm from, half the kids can't read. I remember my friend used to give me his phone and be like, hey, text this girl for me. And I'm like, and I literally was like, all right, what do you want me to say? And he was like, the, of, and I'm like, you can't read or write. Like,
yeah.
These are simple words. Like, I'm not spelling, like, you know,
it's
like major words that are like, you have to look it up in the dictionary. I'm like, these are like common everyday words, like, and. I'm like, dude, holy shit, bro. Can you read?
Right. And those experiences, do they influence you to say, like, the wants that you have, the why behind what you're doing?
100%.
Maybe to want to make schools to help people to.
Yeah, they don't have a chance.
Yeah, offer themselves to the world in a better way.
Yeah.
And of those three people, what do you think you emulate the most from them?
I think I take something different from all of them.
Okay.
So I would say my grandfather, just like being scrappy and working hard.
Mm-hmm.
And like just being like a
workhorse. Off the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll never lose that part of me. Martin Schaffel, more about like the strategy piece. Like, he's a super strategic guy, thinks in such a high level. Like, this guy just, I mean, he's a real leader. You know, like you don't meet a lot of level five leaders. He managed, I think, like 3,000 people and had not one direct report to him. So that's what he calls leadership nirvana. Imagine there's 3,000 people that are running as a machine and not one person directly reports to you. So like he's even replaced himself as CEO and put a CEO in place.
Wow.
And he's just, you know, the chairman.
Yeah, Bob.
And,
yeah.
And nobody needs to call me, nothing. You know, I can go check in and do this, but I don't have to hop on the phone. I don't have to show up. Nothing. It just runs itself. Like, dude, not many people in the world will ever accomplish that.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. And he always talks about it. He's just like, he asks other people, like, hey, how many people do you manage? Okay, well, how much time do you spend managing them? Well, you know, like, I could run it and never have to show up. Like, do you want to work harder? I don't understand that concept where people are like, I want to work more. Dude, I told my business partner, I want less.
Yeah.
Right? If I can do more with less, why would I not?
Absolutely.
Like, it doesn't make sense. So, yeah, that's him. He's a super strategic guy, real leader, like dude, the real deal. And then LeBron, I think just like that that generosity, giving back, like changing the world.
Like that type of stuff. So, it is a sense of like more than yourself. Yeah.
Right.
And it's for sure. Yeah. Do you find that you have any regrets in your life, Justice?
Yeah. I mean, there's always sometimes when I'm like, you know what? Like, damn, I messed up that relationship or... You know, maybe I should have made this decision, stuff like that. But then I always kind of remind myself also, too, that, like, this is where God comes in a lot. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, having that faith where I'm just like, you know what? Maybe there's something greater that I don't know of, right? And maybe I lost something good so I could have something better.
Sure.
So, you know, at the end of the day, there's some nights where I'm like, fuck, man, I wish I would have done that differently. But then I'm just like, you know what? It's okay because things are going to work out better than it would have if that would have happened.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So I always try and remind myself stuff.
Where does your faith come from, Justice? What kind of role does that play in your life? We've touched on it a couple times, but like, what is it concretely? Where does this stem from for you?
My grandparents.
For sure.
Yeah. They, I mean, I always say this, like they saved my life. Yeah. Like growing up, single mom, like I never met my dad, never saw a picture, never heard his voice.
Wow.
Like, ever in my life. Wow. Like if he walked in, like I wouldn't even know that was him. Mm-hmm. I could be that guy on the street right there. But, you know, they gave me like the family and love and patience that I needed growing up as like a young kid who wants to start trouble. And then they gave me, you know, they brought me to God, gave me a relationship with God, gave me a relationship with love. And like, dude, if it wasn't for them, like I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You know, like they gave me that foundation. And then on top of that, you could build.
And they lived it. Like, I mean, your grandpa and your grandma lived it, that the trials at a young age. And so to be brought out of that and to have like a trust that that's
my grandfather's ring actually.
Is it? Yeah. That's awesome. I was looking at
it. This cross they gave to me on my baptism, actually, and it still fits me as an adult. So when it passed away, it's the only thing I found.
Wow.
Yeah. So I keep
it. That's beautiful.
It's a little small.
That's all right.
It moves around.
No, you got to keep
it. I like it.
Yeah. It is. It has that touch, right?
Yeah. It's just a little bit something, you know. I'm not a big jewelry guy. I only wear it because it reminds me.
No, that's nice. Yeah. It's a good touch. It's a good piece. And there's something about keeping it close.
Yeah.
Like, same thing, the cross that I have. It's special. It's a family piece. So it's. Yeah, it does it. And it's right on your heart, you know?
Yeah.
The cross is right on your heart. It's, I always think about that. And when it jingles, it takes you back.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I remember I've broken my chain a couple times and I don't have it. And it's weird, right? It's like that weird feeling because I'm like, I need my jingle back. Literally, the literal jingle that it comes with it. I have to ask you, this is kind of an aside, but it made me think of it. I thought of it earlier, but it's sticking with me. So I have to ask you.
Yeah.
For someone who's traveling around like you, right? For someone who... You're going to different meetings. You have adventurous tendencies.
Oh, yeah. I'm a very adventurous person.
Yeah. What does that look like for you in the future of wanting a family, not wanting a family, settling down, all that? How does that all intertwine?
Dude, that's a great question. That is a tough one.
Yeah.
And me and my business partner actually talk about this, too. It's just like people like us, like we're trying to live something bigger than ourselves. So we have to sacrifice a lot of things. And unfortunately, relationships is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, dude, I want to have a family. I want to have kids. I want to have, like, a loving wife and, you know, and just have one-on-one relationship, something, you know, long-term, amazing. I think I need to be a better person now, too. I think I need to do a lot of growing internally. And obviously, I need to be in one place at one time.
Right.
I think that a certain, and I tell this to my business partner, I tell this to people all the time, like, there's a certain type of woman who will be able to understand somebody like, you know, somebody like me. You know, they understand what it comes with. Like, I'm always going to be doing business. I'm always going to be on calls. You know, when you have my time, you have my undivided attention.
Absolutely.
But when I need to go do stuff, I have to go do it. And I remember I had this one girlfriend. She was just like, you're never, you know, you're always out doing this. You're always this, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, well, you like the things that it comes with, right? Mm-hmm. They always say you can either give them money or time. You can't do both. So at the end of the day, like, I have to be able to balance both of these mm-hmm. things where I can bring you resources, but also I can give you time. And just right now it's super hard because I'm always on the road, right? I'm always traveling. I'm always somewhere else. And yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I'm still trying to figure that out.
That's a hard thing to dabble with, right? Like people who are adventurous, I think that's, it seemed like it's chaotic and it's not. Like for someone who is it, I find myself to be pretty adventurous as well. So I gather, I agree with you on that. And it garners attention in that way. Like it's intriguing, but then you're on the internet and you see that it's all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's not chaos as much as it may be deemed that way. It's very orderly, but you need confidence to go with it. Right. So someone has to have the confidence in knowing, hey, he's doing this for a business. Hey, I can handle this. Hey, I can take care of things on this side. Right. Like I could see that being quite challenging.
Oh, it's very challenging. Yeah.
I mean, given that you're here, you're Florida, you're going to be in New York. I mean, that's three places in the last month and a half. So that's a lot of travel. And to have a wife and a family would be difficult with.
Oh, for sure.
In any of one of those. Yeah. In Boston. Right. Fourth city. Exactly. So.
They'd be like, why are you never home? Yeah, that's why I don't have a pet either. Yeah. Like, my dog would be dead. I wouldn't feed him for a month. I don't know when I'm going to be back home.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
It's like always on the road.
So that's hard. Yeah.
It's definitely hard, but it's rewarding.
I have two big questions that always kind of tie in the end. Well, one big one and the other one I'll open up to you. But the first one of the roots when I started this podcast was about gratitude. The focus for me is always about the mindset. It's kind of why we do what we do. Because I feel like finding things that we like similarly, whether we call it, example, basketball, call it football, whatever the case may be, we like that same thing and there's a sense of connectedness there. But it only goes so far. But understanding why we like it, like why you like LeBron is more than just that he can, you know, have an amazing dunk, he'll freaking throw the hammer down and that's it. There's more to it. It's, you know, Joe
Austin
Tate.
Carr.
I was thinking of Joe Tate. Yeah.
That's I haven't heard that in forever. So I'll be, my God.
Yeah, it just came out so naturally. Yeah, right.
That was the hammer.
Oh, man. Get that weak stove back here. That's it. He's still saying that. Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
Still an announcer?
I think they're like toning him back. I feel like he's not on as much as, because it was like every can.
Yeah, every guy was getting.
So you like LeBron for more than just his basketball, right? It's that why behind it. So I feel like that's the root of the podcast. And one of those mindsets that I think is so important is one of gratitude. My contention is that people who live with gratitude on their mind, with a grateful heart, and live in gratitude have better lives, that they're happier, absolutely. That they're more joyful, that they get more out of life than someone who does not practice those things. What role does it play in your life? And again, it's one of those that you've touched on throughout this conversation, but concretely.
Yeah, dude. I mean, this is something that I actually recently, I mean, it's a very controversial kind of weird book. Some people think it's like mysticism. Some people think it's, but there's a book called The Kabbalion. And in The Kabbalion, what it was talking about is actually gratitude, right? And they were explaining that everything is waves, right? Everything is vibrations, right? And everything is a frequency. And when you're living in a sense, in a state of gratitude, you're in a state of receiving. So like how you were saying, like you will be more blessed walking in a sense of gratitude and in a state of gratitude. Because like, imagine if I give you this coffee, right? What are you going to say?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And why did you say thank you? Because you were receiving.
Yeah.
Right? So the more that you tell the world, thank you universe, thank you world, you're going to be in a state of receiving and you're going to receive more blessings. So like, dude, everything I do and everything I have...
That's okay.
I try to be grateful, you know, because it's just like, hey, if I gave a 10-year-old kid, you know, a gold chain and they weren't grateful, would I get them another gold chain? No, right? Like I'm not, and I can't get you a silver chain because you weren't even happy with the gold chain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, if you want to continue to receive more stuff, you want the universe and God to give you more, right? You have to be grateful for the little things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like having a warm bed, having this conversation, that guy, Michael Singer, who I was talking about, he was just like, you could win the lottery. You could win $168 billion tomorrow. But being on this earth and having the human experience, you are the luckiest thing ever, right? Like the human experience is so amazing.
It is so
amazing. It's such a major blessing. Like go live on Mars is what he talks about, right? Like if you saw a cockroach, you'd run over and not kill it. You'd just be happy to see one other life form.
Yeah.
There's no life on Mars.
Right.
Right here, there's squirrels and people, and they might piss on the side of the street or asking for money or something. But, you know, it's like, hey, this is awesome. You know?
Yeah.
It's a crazy experience that we're all kind of having together when nobody knows what's going on.
Honest. Yeah, it's joyful. And getting to see the ins and outs of who people are is such a pleasure.
Yeah.
Right? Like, God is within each of us. For people of faith, that's something that we recognize. But for more secular definitions, there's things within each of us, traits within each of us that makes us unique and makes us special. And getting to experience those things is the
crazy
brilliance of the human experience.
It's insane.
It is. Yeah. It's crazy. I always find this insane that there's so many of us on this earth.
Oh my gosh.
It's not like totally just blowing up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there is harmony. Like, generally speaking, there is harmony. And sure, there's different areas that have different issues at different times, but across the board, like, mostly peaceful.
Right.
It's incredible. It actually is incredible.
The most peaceful time of all of humanity, actually.
Yeah, amen.
Which,
yeah.
I know the news tries to, obviously, do these wars. I mean, that's been going on since the beginning of time.
Right.
But back in the day, do they go kill people? There's no cameras, no security. Like, dude, they kill brothers and sisters and mothers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, crazy. I mean, dude. We're blessed, dude.
Yeah.
We're in the Renaissance stage right now, I believe.
So, Justice, your background, of course, lenders towards that. You've come out of such struggle and you've seen great perseverance to be able to get to where you are, and you've exemplified great perseverance to get where you are. I find that the connection between regrets and gratitude are pretty harmonious, pretty in sync, because when we look back at the regrets, you're grateful for what the lesson is that we learned more often than not. Like, I tend to, like, most people wouldn't change it, right? Like, as many times as you're like, man, there's certain things where, like, I wish I did that differently. It's hard to say I would change it because you've taken something from it. And I feel like that's where it segues us into that gratitude piece.
Absolutely.
It kind of makes us up for who we are a little bit.
Yeah, dude. God.
Amen.
God did,
yeah. TJ Khaled. Justice, another one for you. As we kind of near towards a little bit of a closing point, do you have any piece of advice or closing thoughts that you would offer to either the audience as a whole or to tailored to a specific audience?
Yeah, I think just... Both. I would say just general advice is, like, figure out what you want, right? I think a lot of people go through life, like, not knowing who they want to be. And everybody goes through life trying to find themselves, which actually, if you asked me earlier, you know, like, how did I get to the point that I'm in now, was I heard a piece of advice by an older guy and I never forgot it. What he said was, don't spend the whole entire life trying to find yourself, or else you'll continue to find a new self every day. He was like, figure out who you want to be and create that. Like, and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, I could just create who I want to be. Like, you know, I'm not going through life being like, oh, let me find myself. Let me go on a spiritual journey. You know, like,
right.
Dude, this is who I want to be. Yeah. And I'm going to create that person. I'm going to become that person. So first I would say, like, create who you want to be and start just living that person's life every day and just, like, become somebody whoever you want to be.
Yeah. Justice, not to cut you off, but, like, who we are is going to, like, it is, it's going to vary at each moment. So if who you are is 52nd and Dennis, and you're not going to be the kid in Florida that's starting all that you have started, right? So if you're just who you are, then you can't be anything else.
Yeah, exactly, for sure. Yeah, it's a really great point.
Yeah.
So do that, create who you want to be. Number two is, like, find a mentor, right? Like, that changed our lives undeniably. Like, go out, find people who have what you want. This exercise actually changed my life. This guy was like, pull out a single loose leaf piece of paper, and he wrote, write a line down the middle. Write down everybody on the left who you would call right now for advice. And it was like, your mom, your dad, your sister, your brother. He was like, on the right, write down everybody who you would trade lives with right now. You'd sign a piece of paper and just, like, you could have their life. It's like a Mark Cuban, a Bill Gates, a LeBron James. He goes, if nobody on the right, nobody on the left is on the right side, stop taking advice from them. You know, he's just like, take advice from people who have what you want. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, everybody around me, I'm listening to what they're telling me. They're not where I want to be. Why would I listen to them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love them and I can love them. You know, there's nothing wrong with being like, hey, I just don't agree with your advice. You don't have what I want. Why would I listen to you?
Mm-hmm.
So I think just finding, like, sound advice and people that you could kind of just, like, learn from and kind of spitball with, I think is, like, super important. And the third piece of advice is about, like, relationships, because relationships is number one. Mm-hmm. I think everything comes down to relationships.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
And I came up with this thing that I call the power of three, and it's like a triangle, and it goes back to the mentor, right? So every 3 months, you should be, which is a quarter, every quarter, you should be connecting with three people who you can find as a mentor, like people you look up to, who you can learn from, stuff like that. Every 3 months, you should be connecting with three peers, people who are on a similar stage in life as you, and just kind of connecting with them, building, you know, seeing how you could be helpful. And then every 3 months, you should be finding three new mentees, people that you could teach. One of the best ways to learn is by teaching.
That's so true.
Yeah. So what you're doing is you're building out the back end, right, of the people who are like the gray hairs, is what you call them. They have the sound advice. They have the experience. They could be your board of advisors, right? Then you're building your army, which is your peers and all the people that are with you that you could do, you know, business with and really continue to grow. And then you're investing in the next generation, which is coming up next. And those are your mentees, and those are the people that you're putting on a platform to go forward. And if you continue to just do that triangle and the power of three every quarter, cycling, getting new people. Dude, if you do that for a year and your life doesn't change, call me and I'll wire you some money. You know?
Right.
Yeah. Like, dude, that'll undeniably change your life, like without a doubt.
Yeah, and you're building your network incredibly thoroughly, very intentionally.
100%.
So, yeah.
So it's just like, hey, I have my peers, have my mentors, have my mentees. And I always try and spend 50% of my time being a mentee and 50% of my time being a mentor.
It's it. Always growing, never status quo, right? Like you're always progressing one way or the other.
Just bringing other people up.
And it's funny when you do teach people, you have to find different ways to display your thoughts in a way that is effective so that they can take it and actually do something with it. And that's like you and I talking, we don't have to do anything with the information, but actually teaching someone how to do something in a mind that is trying to comprehend an idea, it's a very different way of communicating.
Absolutely.
It will definitely change the way you look at the world.
100%. Yeah, I tell people all the time, like, people give a lot of great, like, general knowledge, but they're not giving enough, like, how to, like, next steps.
Sure.
Like, everything that I try and talk about is, like, this is how you do it. Not like, hey, go out there and meet people. Hey, I just explained how and what and the structure of meeting these people. So, yeah.
All right. Last one, just on this, just because it kind of, same thing, it tripped my thought. For the person, doesn't have to be a kid, but for the person who is at the point where they're like, I'm lost.
Yeah.
I think I know who I want to be. Like, I know who I want to be. What's my next step?
What's my next step? Well, I guess that first thing that I said is just like finding out where you want to go.
Right.
I'm always reminded of, and it's like one of the most beautiful things in film that I've ever seen, right, is Alice in Wonderland, right? She goes, I'm lost. Well, where are you going? I don't know. Well, if you don't know where you're going, how could you be lost?
Yeah.
Right? So it's just like, how could I be lost if I don't know where I'm going? So the first thing you have to do is figure out where you want to go. So like, I would just kind of have that trial and error. If you are lost and you don't know where you want to go, I talk about these two things. One of them is the push and one of them is the pull, right, in life. And you will start to be able to feel it. It's immediate, right? Is this something that I'm pushing, or is pushing me? That could be, you know, your family or my job, you know, like you feel when it's like I'm exerting effort, or something is pushing on me, or I'm trying to push this. And then the things that pull you, like this, right? The podcast, it, like, you wake up, you're happy, like, okay, I'm, you know,
right,
it's pulling up.
Yeah.
And just continue to go towards the things that pull you. And throughout the trial and error, you'll feel it when it's right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'll know, like, okay, there's something here. And I just need to double down on it and see how this could be something, like, full-time or whatever else.
Yeah.
So I always say, like, you know, just keep trying. Like, never make a mistake. And, just go towards the fucking pool.
That's awesome. That's great advice, Justin. Thank you for just kind of sharing that and opening up all the way across the board. Thank you for joining us here at Chaz Clark. You've shared amazing stories and just the wisdom that you radiate from an experience of real great trials all the way through to now reaping rewards of the efforts that you put in along the way. I love that you're appreciative of the people that have influenced you in your life. And I just appreciate that, because I think our family, and like, I live with my grandparents right now, living with our grandparents, it teaches you so much. And it's a beautiful opportunity that really not a lot of people get to get.
Right.
And so you're sounding stupendous, and all of that has made you who you are. And I love that we, meaning the audience here at Chaswell Clark and me, have gotten to see that and hear from you. So I really do appreciate you coming on.
Dude, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate it, Justice. Everybody, this has been another episode of the Chaswell Clark podcast. Check out Justice Mendez. I will link all of his platform and 161, his business, into the description below. Or if you're on YouTube, I'll hyperlink it, whatever. So make sure you check all that out. If you haven't yet, hit the subscribe button. We are in season 4. It's about time you've hit it. If you're following along and haven't yet, I don't know what you're waiting on. But this has been another episode of Chats with Clark. I'm your host, Joe Clark, signing off. Thanks for tuning in.